Let me just introduce myself. I am John Warlow. I'm an adult child and family psychiatrist. I work in private over on the south side and also with the health department down at Woodridge in the Child Guidance Clinic. I'm also working, as I was expressing earlier on, to some degree in liaison with the Gateway Baptist Church, looking at services there. And hopefully we'll be involved in looking at a Christian Counsellors Association network within Brisbane. That's who I am, and I guess I'd like to find out a bit about you folks. This seminar is on caring for families. Can I just have a rough show of hands, please, as regards your own perception of what level of experience, contact you've had with caring for families, just so that we can be more on the same level. On a scale of 0 to 10, that's often what I say to the people I meet, on a scale of 0 to 10, 0 is that you've had no experience at all, 10 is that you're a real whiz kid and you should be up here and I should be down there. Okay, so as I just go through the numbers, can I just have a brief show of hands as to where you see yourself at? We'll go up in twos. 0 to 2. Okay, be as realistic as you can. Okay, 2 to 3 and 4. Right, that would be about say 1/3. 4 and 5 and 6. We're going to have lots of thirds, aren't we? About a quarter. 7 and 8. Right. Okay, that's. And 9 and 10. None of us, due to our bias, will put our hands up there. So it's quite a spread then, I'd say equally about going from the bottom to the top, roughly in quarters, I guess. So hopefully what we'll do will be something which you'll all be able to pick up on. Are there any questions or issues at this stage? Which anyone wants to bring up? I want some dialogue. Okay, this is a seminar, workshop, and if it's not where you're at, it's going to be a waste of time for you. Anything you want to say? Okay. I'd like to start off with prayer, and I'll pray. Dear Lord Jesus, we pray that you would let this time be a useful time. Pray that from this seminar and the one tomorrow that we'll be able to go out and to understand people in the context of families and also to be able to start to help them more than what we know already. We pray that we might be your hand in this day and age to the people around us. Let's be a productive time in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, as regards the schedule, we're here for about 1.5 hours, I understand, and we'll be stopping promptly by 5:30. Is that right? I'll just give a little bit of a talk, fairly free-flowing. I've got my thoughts about what I want to get across, and then what I think we'll do is we'll go straight into a role play. Okay, I'll get over with my bit as quickly as possible because you'll probably only be able to concentrate for a few minutes on that. We'll get on to role play. Now, some people have kindly volunteered and to actually be a family. I don't know what's going on in that family. I'm going to be the person who's going to be doing the interviewing. The idea of this is to give you a bit of a flavour for family counselling, okay, in one kind of setting. I'm going to see myself as a lay counsellor or a someone where people might come to for help. and that won't be very different from my professional role anyway. Then what I think would be beneficial is dialogue over what's happened during that time of the role play. What if there's anything which people really want to say something or ask for clarification, we'll treat it like it'll be on a video recorder. And so we'll just press stop or pause. We'll have a look at what's going on. Okay, we can rewind. If we're getting a bit bored and things are a bit slow, we can fast forward. So we can get a feel for two aspects of helping a family. First aspect is understanding, which is critical to helping, and then the second aspect is helping. That will overlap the 2 days. Today, hopefully, if we get an idea of understanding a family, then we've got somewhere. So that's all I'm really thinking of today. So it's going to be a bit of talk from me and followed by role play. If we have more time after that, what we might even do is split up into groups, and if you don't want to do any role playing, you could observe, and if you're willing to do some role playing, you can do it. Because I think from my perspective, learning is best done, or one of the best forms of learning is through participation. I think that's all I want to say at this stage by way of introduction, apart from saying that I'd really encourage dialogue. If there's anything anyone wants to say, please do yell out. How does that sound? Is that roughly in line with people's liking? Anyone going to be majorly disappointed at this stage? Okay. Just from a scriptural and theological point of view, like Gary, I spent only 1 year in theological college, so I'm not a theologian. Families are referred to throughout the Bible, as we know. And God has planned for us to be within the family unit. Seems that quite a lot is said about that. As we know, in the Old Testament, it was mainly a patriarchal society where there's quite a difference between the families then and what they are now. Then moving on into the New Testament, it seems that Jesus really elevated the role of women, the woman of Samaria, other women he had contact with. And my impression from verses like 1 Peter, I think it's chapter 3, talking about, although in the context of prayer, that although for the husbands to respect their wives and that there is a sense of equality within that relationship, talked about in Ephesians, that's one of the major passages, as we know, on marriage and the family. For the husbands are the head of the house and wives are to respect the husband, but the husband is to love the wife as Christ loved the church. That's the trick point. And ultimately, and from my own experience within my own marriage, and I think it's something which we all have to work at, is that those occasions where headship is involved are minimal. And I think we often talk so much about it, and I think often those, in reality, if there's sufficient communication within the marriage, they aren't, that's not such an issue. Where there is a deadlock, then it's important to go to someone else to get a different perspective, to see if even then there can be an agreement on what's going on. So I believe in a real partnership within marriage. That's all I want to say from the biblical perspective. The family is sanctioned by God very much. Just from the secular point of view, I think that I find it very encouraging that there is a lot of concern for family within the secular point of view, there's the whole rise of family therapy, particularly in the last 20 years or so. A lot of theories coming out as regards that. It's becoming a very popular modality for intervention and a very useful one. And something which I think we as Christians can really hook into. And hopefully from this presentation you'll get a bit of a taste for that. As regards the integration, I think from my perspective, the biggest variable I find, but I'm working on it, is whether the people I'm seeing are Christians or not. It's an awful lot easier to integrate if they're Christians. However, I think I need to particularly work on looking at integration with non-believers and praying with them as is fitting. I think there is certainly room for integration in family work as in individual work. About family care, I guess what I'll be doing is hopefully providing a window for you to look into what family work is more about. Just to say there's a large range of family work. This is only one type. The critical type of family work, I think, is just the body of Christ getting around a family and supporting that family in a state of crisis, being relevant to where that family is at, throwing casseroles at them when need be, helping at a point where there's a separation in the parents, allowing the mother to go out. She desperately needs to go out and have some time to herself while someone babysits the kids. Those sort of things. I guess that also leads on to the definition of family. There's so many types of families on there which we have around us, ranging from the single parent family, generally where it's the mother, sometimes the father, through to the more traditional type family. But now we're getting the families where both parents are the same sex, and families where, in fact, there starts to be a situation where the kids can't coexist with the parents and they have to be fostered out, which is tragic. Okay, what I'd like to do now is just give you a bit of my theoretical background, where I come from, how I see the family and the individual in the context of the family. How's that? Any questions so far? Or any statements, comments? I won't wait around long. Right. I guess from the my perspective as regards firstly the individual and then the family, I think we consist of yet again some more circles. The first one is, I think, the most inner aspect which we have, which is the spirit. This is how I see people in my own mind's eye when I meet with people professionally. That spirit might be, as it says in Ephesians, dead to God. It might be alive to God. And then there's the what I'd call the soul or the personality. That's the where I see the temperament, what we're like, and we'll come on to that later in the context of the family. Then there's the psyche, or the mind. That consists of five areas. Firstly, there's the mood. Okay, this is where I pigeonhole my things. There's the mood, then there's the volition or motivation place, Thirdly, there's the perceptual area, which is where how we perceive things, which is very important in therapy, because someone might say something, you would have experienced it yourself, and it's either their false teeth or your hearing aid, but what you hear isn't what they said. That's the area of the perception. So it's the mood, the area of volition or energy, will, that sort of area. Then there's the perception. Then there's thinking, our thoughts, our thought life. And then there's what's called the cognitive area, which is more to do with memory and attention. Although the word cognitive can imply a lot more than just that, this is the way I break it down. So that's the psyche. Okay. And we really need to see people as whole people. That they have a spirit, they have a soul or a personality, that they have a mind, then they have a body. Body consists of four parts. And I get rather basic here and talk about the ABCs. A is appearance. B is behavior. C is communication. And S is the soma, or the body, your various systems within your body, your cardiac system, spiritual system. So there's the appearance, behavior, communication, and soma. Then there's just to keep to Gary's P's, we've got physical, psyche, personality. I'll put pneumo, the Greek for spirit, in the middle. We're really onto P's for that. But then outside the person, there's yet another circle, and that's the social. And we really need to be aware of that one, the social. I haven't found a P for that one. The closest... was there a P there from the... No. The closest group around us is the family, and that's where we're going to move on to. Now, when we look at the family, I'm just going to rub this off. Yeah, I think there's a lot of various classifications. Some people would combine the two. They both function within the brain. It's just my way of doing it. And, yeah. Yeah. Psychiatry certainly deals with that, but I guess, there's the tripartite structure, body, mind, and spirit. Mind there would include personality. Then there's the bipolar one, which is more a Greek way of thinking, body and spirit, where they seem to be very much apart. But I take it, I guess, from the verse, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, that's your body, and with all your mind. With all your heart, with all your soul. Heart is the spirit, soul is personality, with all your strength, okay, that's the body, and with all your mind. Okay, so that's where I get my structure from. Moving on to the family. Family consists of lots of individuals. And here's a family with we'll give two adults at the top and two children at the bottom. Now we start to look at family, starting to look at family theory, or systems theory. Because what can happen is, I guess, just before I go on to that, looking at that picture there, that this people can be placed either excessively close or distant. That's the issue of distance. In this family here on the board, people are pretty well equidistant from each other. If I had families coming like that to see me, I'll be thrilled. And I think that's basically the biblical structure. It doesn't necessarily mean the amount of time spent with the person. It's to do with issues of quality of relationship. And in fact, in assessing a family, what's really useful to do is getting them to do a sculpture. And we might try and do that with the family, which will role play. Okay? And what they're doing there is they're actually showing who's close to who. Because it's a bit like wheels on a car. Wheels on a car which got two at the front and two at the back run really nicely. Let's have a look at another type of car. I'll move these two over to here. This is our model family. Not atypically do we get a family where the father is just about off the whiteboard. The mother and maybe one of the children, sometimes literally in bed, and if not that close, are very close. And then there might be another sibling, brother or sister, who's pretty distant from anyone. And this is a very common family you see in families where there's alcohol problems, where there's schizophrenia, where there's physical problems within one person. And often it's one person who takes the burden of the family, and that's called scapegoating. Okay, and you remember the story in the Bible of the scapegoat, how the sins of the people were put onto the scapegoat, and then the scapegoat was sent out. And that's a classic thing happening in families. And often then, the parents might come with a child or a teenager, or you just might meet the teenager, and they're having real problems. And until you look at the family structure, okay, you can help that individual, but it's less likely you're going to give them all the help they need because you aren't dealing with their social side of them, their outer circle. Now, if you had a van with wheels, two wheels very close together and the other one's miles apart, it would be having problems, and that's just what happens with families. And often just by changing the structure of the family, you can actually get the family to start to be functional. Now, how would you change the structure of this family? Has anyone got any ideas? What would you be wanting? What would you be wanting to do, achieve? Not how would you go about it, I guess, but what would you be wanting to achieve? You've got the dad up here, the mum's here, with, say, let's say a 10-year-old. And then there might be a 13-year-old or a 15-year-old here, and both dad and the 15-year-old are starting to exit the family. Not very happily. The 15-year-old's starting to rebel. Dad's going to the pub much more, or staying at work more, and this child is going to have real problems in teenage trying to unstick from mum. And mum's going to have real problems because she's going to have no one left around her when he does unstick. How would you? Yeah. Okay. Bring mother and father closer together. Right. Now, if you did that, what problems might you come up with? You're dead right. Bring mum and dad closer together. What problems would you come up with, either you or anyone else? Sorry? Sticky child. Do you want to expand on that? Jealousy problems between who? Yeah, sure. they're all going to find it really difficult. It's just like if you took some of the bricks out of this building and put them somewhere else, the whole building is going to feel out of shape. Now, there's the concept of homeostasis, which is a very complicated word, which basically means trying to keep things the same. And they, believe it or not, families, when they come to you for change, would often present one person like this girl. She's a real problem. Okay? But if you, and they just want you to deal with the girl, they don't want you to touch the marriage, and they don't want you to touch the family. Okay? Because if you do, then mum and dad might have to get close. Now there's problems there, because mum and dad have never been close, or maybe they were and they were hurt. And that stems right back into their own backgrounds. And therefore you need to ask about their own parents and see where they were at, okay? And also this boy has probably been there since day dot, and he's going to have real problems finding this other man coming in. He's not going to like that. Because another thing which you do as well in this is you often the mother comes quite exasperated. They just cannot control this kid, or they can't control the 13-year-old or 15-year-old. She, that again might come from her background. Her father might have been over strict, something like that, and she's always wanted to be pally with this boy, be mates, quote unquote, I hear so frequently. And so to move from the right-hand picture to the left-hand picture, the boy is going to feel what? How's he going to feel? Rejected? Any other things? Angry? Sorry? Manipulated? Pretty unhappy and demoted. And who gave his mum permission to get stronger than him, sort of thing? You get the same picture with toddlers as well, same thing there. The father and the mother are going to find it difficult. If you're going to ask them to actually get close together, what sort of things in your mind would you be thinking about how they actually do get close together? What makes up a marriage? Right. Work on common goals. Yeah. Sharing feelings. Communication. Which is part of sharing feelings and communication fitting together to do common goals. Communication, sorry? Touching, the physical side of things. You're getting really into problems there, because the biggest sex organ, particularly for the woman, is the brain. And where there isn't communication and where there's a lot of disharmony, and often sex and aggression are linked together, they aren't exactly going to feel mad keen to lash out on that. But then you've got the poor guy who's on the outer side, and he really wants to go for that one first. Yeah?
We're talking about, is this a non-Christian family?
This is any family, Christian or non-Christian. But why do you ask the question?
Well, because if it were a Christian family, I think the father should use his right as the head of the family, and he should make the first move to
Oh, that there would be more men like that. You're dead right. And I don't know if people heard that if there was a Christian father, he would humble himself and get close to his wife and to and also to the boy particularly. And yeah, but that takes time, you see, and he hasn't got time. That's a really good question. And the question was, how do you tackle the problem of when you suggest change, the very fact that you're pointing the finger at someone that they've got to change? Is that right?
Well, I would say, You're saying that mum and dad have got changed.
Yeah.
Change.
Yeah. They put it on the responsibility onto the other person. This is where you're getting more into real life. And there, I often find that, and this is a difference with non-Christians and Christians, I think. With non-Christians, I think the only energy left to change is really the energy of desperation. And I'd say that 90% of the more difficult cases which I have, which do change, I ask them at the end why they changed, and they said words to the effect of being desperate. And with Christians, however, I think we do have a different form of energy. And I think that was alluded to in the previous question, that out of obedience to God, and I think that's in the Ephesians passage, was out of obedience to Christ, to respect the husband's birth, and husbands, to love your wives as Christ loved the church. And we have a different, we have what I call the Christian advantage. We can actually call on another source of energy. But even then, I think it can be really difficult. Because from the father's point of view, he's got to start to spend more time. He's got to start to communicate. And men aren't the best communicators, generally. And they've got their energy elsewhere. And whereas the woman's left at home, often cut off from other people, and she really wants to communicate. So I guess there's a communication, there's the physical, there's also the spiritual side. And so in other words, in building a marriage or a family together, you're looking at linking on every area. The spirit, or the pneuma. Let's put the soul and mind together in this case. Communication, that's the bit which links that bit. Communication, and you would have heard this one so often, we'd be given two ears and one mouth, the greatest need to listen. When couples are at a stage where they can't talk together, what I do then, I mean, I think the baseline, bottom line there is actually getting them to talk or to listen with an outside person there. The next step is for them to take it in turns, have one night a week at home where they just listen. And the other partner, all they're allowed to do is just to understand, reflect, even if they disagree. And because so often when someone says something, the other partner, right from the start, within the first minute or so, disagrees, and from that moment on is shut off. And this is what's called empathy. So communication, spiritual communication, physical communication. Often when things are really bad, I really try and put a hold on that, a restraint on that, and suggest, ideally, that they don't even have sex. Either that or have some kind of compromise, because that's not... Often the guy would find that the most difficult, and have some kind of compromise there. Because often, otherwise, the whole sexual thing is a vicious cycle. And it's particularly with the male getting much more frustrated while the female withdraws. So that's looking at building a marriage. We must get on this role play soon. But I guess you're getting the idea of structure, okay? Apart from distance, another critical issue in the family is power. And what we're going to be talking about now, these are the things which we're going to be looking for in the role play. Okay? And this is what I call the personality of the family. The family, if you want, has its own personality. It's not the personality of any one individual, it's their own personality. And I'm just going to write up a list of things to look for, which actually define what the personality of an individual is and the personality of a family is. And it's these things which need, in my opinion, to be looked at. Okay?
What we've been talking about is issues to do with distance and closeness. Okay?
So we'll put that under maybe, or we could put out the distance. And one of the problems with families is the families can be too close or they can be too far, and it's really hard to get it right. And you get problems initially with bonding. If the parent and child don't bond, they're going to have real problems later on in life. And then if they bond too closely, they're going to have real problems later on in life. And then after such a short time of 15 years or so, they've got to start to detach. And this poor mother particularly, and also the father, but particularly the mother, has to start to let go. How very difficult. And they've got to get it just right according to our culture, because we don't have the extended family system. It's a really hard job for parents, I think. By the way, I've got three boys. They're all fairly young, but they're six, two. No, he's three now. 6'3" and one. He's just coming up for his second birthday. But I do see a lot of other families, so I am with teenage kids.
The second one is issues to do with, I guess, roles and identity. An example of that would be the scapegoat, okay, or the peacemaker. The scapegoat or the peacemaker. You can put names to them, and you just sort of make them up in your head as you go along. Then there's issues of centeredness. Okay, I guess we within the individual that's fairly clear whether one's self-centered or other-centered or God-centered. But within the family, whether the family is a very self-centered family, they don't look outside of themselves, okay, or they do look outside. The fourth issue is the issue of control. Now, this is as important as the distance one. Control. And not infrequently do I see a triumphant three-year-old walking into my room with two doormats following behind. It's marvellous, actually. You do a before and after photo. And after a few sessions, that go to parents, back as real parents. But that goes along through life. Just by the way, you can also tell the parent who has the least control by the amount of yells. There are the yellometer. Is a good one, because although they might be controlling is in fact the reverse of being in control. Someone who's in control doesn't yell. But in this family over here, I would suggest to you that the person in control here is the 8-year-old boy who's in control in that situation. The father has just about given up. The mother is trying to be a mate with this 8-year-old boy, trying to compromise. And the 15-year-old girl is exiting, maybe starting to become promiscuous or whatever, or exiting in a way which isn't going to be helpful. So control is a critical thing, and then we'll maybe have a go in family sculpturing to look at assessing how you assess control and distance, particularly those two things. Because in this picture, what we'll be looking at is getting the mother to go up,
the father to come in. Okay, that's going to be very difficult, but that's the foundation of the family. The poor boy is going to be demoted. Literally, I mean, you do literally get kids sleeping in the mother's bed. Who then shoves out the father? She does. And to try and re-engage the daughter before it's too late. In the real case,
the more difficult cases, particularly in lower socioeconomic groupings like, say, in Woodridge, you wonder, and it reminds me of James Dodson's book, Discipline While You Can, whether in fact it's nearly too late. And I think, but pre-adolescent, there's a chance, depending on how severe things are. If they're really severe, if you try and sort things out, you'll be trying to hold on to the tail of the horse, while it's bolting, and you'll get a kick from the hoof while it goes. I'm talking about a severely disorganized family, which has been disorganized from day dot. I mean the previous generation, if not the one before. If it's not severe, certainly there's hope when they're 15 or 16. I guess in talking about families, we are mainly talking about the family at the stage before the empty nest syndrome, whereupon after that you're generally looking at the marital subsystem in the family, and the kids will not want to be seen, generally speaking, with the family, so you can't do much family care. Now, just while we're talking about this, I'm thinking that, a lot of you won't be getting the opportunity to do this, but hopefully what this will do is give you a feel when you see someone outside church on Sunday and they come up to you and they're saying, I'm having awful problems with my kids. Or you see the 15-year-old saying, my parents are, and some abusive term is following them. Okay, sure, take them where they're at, but remember they're in the context of the family. If you just deal with them individually, I think you're only partially helping. Okay? Control.
Then the last two are conflict. And so one question I might ask is, what is the best thing which causes conflict in this house? Okay? And then conflict resolution. How is it resolved? Okay. Just another thing is the mood of the family. And that's the McMaster's model, which looks at these things in different formats. But it's quite a helpful list to sort of get. Now, just have a think now of some families which you know. Does this sort of fit in at all? Can you sort of see any of these issues? Closeness, particularly to do with issues of closeness, control, conflict resolution. And the best form of conflict resolution in the family is what? Sorry? Yeah, communication, I think. And mood. Okay? Just another thing before we do the role play is the timeline. Okay, so we've taken a snapshot of the family. Now we're just looking at the timeline. Say that family went for a crash for nothing. You're taking a snapshot of the family in the context of a movie, and that movie has been going on for generations. And the generations, and sins of the generations before, are being seen now. And this is one theory of family therapy, which is why it's important to get a bit of a background information. Questions like, what was it like for you when you were this age? Often you find, in the case of this family, mother herself had great difficulty in leaving. And tell us a bit about your mum and dad. What were they like? How did you get on with them? What was their marriage like? Okay. And you see a lot of similarities flowing. And then you start to get a feel that they're carrying a baton from one generation to the next. Or if you want, the sins of one generation to the next. John and Paul Sanford spent a lot of their time looking at this sort of thing. And but the intergenerational conflict certainly isn't known to them. It's known in the secular world. We look at this a lot, taking a family history. Okay. Now the importance of this is two things. One is you find and you understand how difficult it is for this family to change, because the momentum has been there for so long. Okay. And once you've found how difficult it is to change, you can start to really empathize with them. Because with that family, you could just give them a booklet, how to change your family. But Dad, you've got to get a bit closer. So have you, Mum. Son, you've got to start to take a bit of what your mum says. Mum, you've got to become more in control. And you, 15-year-old, have got to do what you're told. See you later. They won't see you later. By doing this, you get a sense of that this might have been going on. I often look to the previous generation. Before then, you might even get a bit of a hint. But the generation before that, generally I find people haven't got a clue, because they just don't know. The other thing is that it helps you to understand, it helps them to know which way they're going to go. Okay? You can extrapolate to some extent with a degree of clarity and, I think, accuracy, which way the family is going to go. Let me illustrate with this family here. We'll say that 6 years ago, okay, this will be an easier family. 6 years ago, the family structure was a good one. And I'll draw it out. All the wheels in place, the car's going along beautifully. But then something happened, the mother's mother died, or some crisis, and the father had a lot of stress at work, or he got more involved in the church. And the daughter was going through early puberty at that stage, and there were peers around that, peers who were having quite an influence her on that time. And Mum and Dad didn't know how to handle it, because Dad wasn't there, because he was at the meetings, and Mum was having a bit of a depression at that time. And you can see how that this family developed. Now, extrapolate from where they were 6 years ago through to the second diagram where they are now. Would anyone like to come and draw where they're likely to go to in the future? This is place the ball competition. No, it's not. Anyone know going to? This is where they're going in the future. It's critical to do this because by doing this, and particularly through sculpturing, which is something I'm just into at the moment, which we'll show you hopefully, if I don't forget. This actually starts to motivate families. They say, I don't want my 15-year-old to leave, and I don't want my 10-year-old, how old was he? He was about 10, wasn't he? I don't want him in 2 years' time to start to rebel, because that's what's going to happen. I don't want the marriage to break up when they've left, which is just going to happen. Okay. Who's going to be brave? He wants to draw the structure of the family. Did I hear a voice or see a hand? Come, Jen. Have a go.
I think that sound would be
wrong. Yeah. Father's off the whiteboard pretty well.
This child plays well.
Yep.
The mum's still here.
Mum's still around.
But this child, I think, would
you be starting to exit?
Yeah.
Yep. Any comments on what Jan said? That the father's off the whiteboard this little bit. The mother's on her own, feeling very isolated, having a recurrence of her depression. The boy's starting to rebel in high school now, and the girl's off the scene. Any comments on that? Right, wrong, changes?
Yeah, anyway, it wouldn't work that way. The mother became the dormant, the boy's dormant.
Right, what do you think would happen then? If the mother became the boy's doormat, what would happen then?
Then probably the boy would be still be at home, right there.
Right. Generally speaking, what I find is that the energy which comes through adolescence, that from the physical changes, not just the sexual ones, but just the whole, they become stronger, and also the psychological changes, Piaget and things like that, and also the peer pressures, they just generally cannot restrain that if it's sufficient. However, if there's a lot of energy there, you do certainly find, I mean, if there wasn't sufficient energy for that kid to rebel, what would then happen? Where would mum and the boy be years down the road?
They'd still be together. Right?
Yeah, they'd still be together. And running into a homosexual relationship, you say the boy would be? Yeah, I guess that's a possibility, depending. And I think, I doubt in this case, you'd want to have that structure right from very early on. When he's born, the father wouldn't even be there. And there would be maybe a family history of homosexuality and things like that as well.
I saw a structure like that, where homosexuality didn't come into it, but it came into it when the boy was then 45 or something like that.
Did you hear that? That there was a case where the boy was 45 and still at home?
Yes.
And a homosexual? Okay.
Because he wasn't homosexual early on.
He wasn't?
There was development that came through and mother got rid of.
Right. Did you hear that? He wasn't homosexual early on, but he had girlfriends, and then later on he became homosexual. Yeah. Manipulative mother. I saw a case, you would not believe it, and I wrote back to the referring GP, which was my wife, saying this daughter who'd been looking after her mother for 30 years, the mother is now not around 80 and the daughter around 60. I said to the referring GP, my wife, I've never seen such a good mother keeper before in all my life, and as regards the mother, I've never seen such a good daughter keeper in all my life. And the situation was that the mother was living in the house. The daughter and husband, where were they living? In the garage. And to get, I mean, it's obvious what you'd say to them. The mother was literally lamenting as well. And it's obvious what you'd want to do is, I mean, it'd be appropriate for the mother to go into a home. That would have been appropriate. And for the kids to go in, I think, I mean, we've got maybe a disagreement here, I'm not sure, but for the parents, for the children to sort of reestablish their relationship. But if you were to said that sort of thing, or even for the mother to stay in the home, and for the daughter and the husband to go off somewhere else, they just couldn't do it. And note some communication from the front rows. Do you want to mention anything? Or I'll just see if this is working.
I have a friend. Actually, describing the mother living with the daughter and the husband. The husband had a drinking problem some years ago. He'd been sober quite a number of years, but he was saying Mary's mother. She's pretty old and she's pretty tough, and she's lived with them for ages. I went up there to visit. I was in North Queensland, and like you can, when you're living within the family structure, you don't often realise that you've got a problem because it's always been there. And between her husband And her mother, she was on she was like a, you know, chasing her tail all the time. And I said to her, my gosh, you've got two of them. You're not just married to one, you're married to two. I said, how long has your mother been living here? Well, she'd been living there some time, nobody else would have her. And Mary had such a guilty conscience about mother with the possibility of her going into a nursing home. Well, another time I went up and asked her to, well, I'll involve you, I'll do something about that, go off and have a holiday or something, leave the pair together. Well, she had an accident and she had to go into hospital, Mary did, and when she came home, mother was in a nursing home, but the nursing home couldn't tolerate mother because she was a real old tarter. But then somebody that used to go visit somebody else in this nursing home to pity on this dear little old lady and took her out of the nursing home and took her home with them. My goodness me. Situation was now a little old tarter was running the roost in somebody else's home and leading them the life of whatever you call it. And Mary and Jack are going for it along very nicely and they don't want mum back. But she's it really is quite interesting. What you were describing here with their father on the outside. My father was an alcoholic and my mother had nine children. But my eldest sister was the sort of bring this up. A lot of what you describe is typical, but not really. Mother did the managing, the fixing. The bondage I had with my mother was broken before Christmas. I'm now 62, which is incredible. I married an alcoholic too, so the pattern was to a degree repeated. But the I was very fortunate. The whole of the family, I'm the only one that can sort of take in, I think, what you're saying. But it's the lack of communication.
Yeah.
Mother talked out of, father tried. He couldn't, you see. He'd married a mother figure. And my mother was very good at doing more or less what she said. But of course she didn't realise it because she came out of the same environment. And as it is with the generation goes down and down and out. My sister, my eldest sister that used to look after us, she married somebody else and also got onto the bandwagon with the same pattern. And all her children either married somebody with a drinking problem or a drug problem. And so it's gone on and on. Unfortunately, I didn't have any children. But as I say, I have other people's children. And the Lord takes me through his path to clean them.
Thank you very much. That's I think that gives a sense that we've got to look at families at all ages. And that was... Do you want to say something?
My husband was very dominated by his parents.
Do you want to talk up? Do you want to say something?
My husband was very dominated by his parents, and there's some to say that my marriage did not because of it. But in the last 6 years we've been separated. Now, his parents have died in that time, and during the time of our separation, he has actually been a homosexual. He has had women, girlfriends that are in the 40 to 60 age group. He's just come back to near where we live, and I am very aware of the problems it's caused in my family having two children, because one of my sons is very close to me and the other one is more distant. And I have to be very careful that I balance it out because I'm aware of the problems that my husband's parents caused him, and I don't want that to be in my life.
Okay, thanks. So it seems like the structure there was that the husband was very close to the parents, who the in-laws, who are quite out of law in a way, and interfering possibly in the marriage, and there was a breakup. He then became homosexual, and you think he was before, and your one of your children is very close to you, the other not so close. Okay, so I mean, you can picture the structure there in your heads, can you? Okay, and what one could do in that sort of structure to get the wheels in alignment. I guess that's what I do a lot, is wheel alignment. Let's get on to the role play. And if someone could just adjust the video so it's pointing more here. And if I could ask the participants to come up, we'll get the chairs organised here. And as I say, I don't know much what's going on. That's with this case. The question was, are we working from the assumption that people choose to make these changes? Often they come without that choice. They come not knowing what to do, and even once they know what to do, they might not want to do it. And so one of the issues there is, what I try and do sometimes in my work is try and make them more desperate. I do, because that's often the place of energy where they can change. So one way I do that is, and it might come across in a role play, it might not, I don't know what's going to happen, this is putting myself on the line, but one of the things which I do is try and make them more desperate. I think with Christians, that you do have access to another source of energy, as I say, and I think there can be repentance, there can be forgiveness, which is critical, and there can be another source of energy independent from within the family, which is that one's own relationship with Jesus. And that's the other source of energy, which, as I said, I call the Christian advantage. Anyway, here we are.
I'm a pastor of camp, so I won't sit on this chair. I don't think it will still result in engagement with the family. You might want to come further up if you can't hear. Okay, we'll try and speak up. We need to be a bit closer together. It's a cracked rule. Okay, normally I'll be facing that way a bit more.
I would rather go to another school, don't I?
Right. let me know. Because my short-term memory sometimes isn't as good as what I'd like to be. And then I actually, what I do is I get the ages, I get the names right from the beginning. I do that. So, and I haven't met these. Now, you might be dealing with another situation. They might be in the church, you know them already. Okay, in this case, I don't know. And that's your how old?
I'm 56.
56. And what do you what do you do with your time, Annette?
I work full time. I've got a packing job that's Annette.
Right, so you work full time. Can you hear?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Annette.
I'm John.
John, and you're how old, Annette?
I'm 42.
42. And what do you do with your time?
I'm the sales manager of a large company.
Quite a busy man.
Mm-hmm.
What are your hours?
I just have to be flexible.
How much of the time are you away from home? That's a really important question. How much of the time are you away from home? Not how long do you work out. How much time are you away from home?
I'm away from home a lot. What is it? They start generally about 6. But every second or 2 weeks, I go away to
Rome. So, and weekends?
Most weekends I'm around.
What do you make of what Deb said? This is sort of addressing the process, okay? I mean, Deb already, I'll get into the process. That's the non-verbal communication fairly quickly. I find that the non-verbal communication actually tells me more about the family than the actual verbal stuff. Okay, now this is going to be a circular question. I ask someone else what they think is happening elsewhere. So I won't ask Deb in this case why she laughed, but I'll ask, sorry, what was your name again?
John.
John. Manope. John, what do you make of the fact that Deb laughed then?
She's just a bit outside at the moment, Doctor, and it's just what she's going through, and she'll get over it all right. She's a good kid, she'll be right.
I think you're a bit optimistic.
Yeah, there seems to be a bit of a difference of opinion between your parents on this.
They're both the same.
You
couldn't care less about me. I'm leaving home.
You're leaving home?
That's what it's not.
Here we go again.
I think that. Well, if you got it right in the first place, you should be all right now. Look at the problems you've got.
Yeah, but it seems that something is going on there with your parents and your grandma. What do you think is happening? Simple question again.
Grandma, she's a bit of a fussy duck.
She's a bit of a fussy duck. What do you mean?
Oh, she tries to look after me. She's a bit bossy. They don't really care.
They don't really care. What would you say to that, Elaine?
I can't understand how she had the reason to say that. I really can't. She's never home. She wouldn't know. She's right now. She's never home. Neither of them.
What if situation is this? That's a problem when you get everyone talking at once, which is a chaotic family. It's okay to, I mean, looking at the personality side, you can already assess what the communication, adequacy of the communication is like. Okay, hopefully everyone's speaking at the same time. What you have to do there fairly quickly is to, what I think you have to do is to actually intervene and start to become more directive and just get one person to speak at a time. That's one approach. The other thing is just to reflect on the process again. To say, it seems to me that everyone's speaking all at the same time. Okay, and get them to address that. Whereupon they'll probably all speak at the same time. Forget where we were. Sorry, what were you saying?
I just said that she wouldn't know, she's never home, he's never home, and she's a fussy duck.
What do you mean a fussy duck?
She thinks she owes me. But I'm going into him because I'm 16 and I'm leaving home.
So Suzette, you feel as though your two parents don't really care for you. They're distant from you. Whereas in fact your mum, your grandma's like trying to hold on to you.
I love her.
That what you don't believe her? And then why do you think that Deb doesn't believe her grandmother?
Well, to be honest, I think the whole situation has been most unfortunate. Mum, I'm sorry to say this, but I think you've been interfering, and it's just been very unhelpful. You know, I'm trying very hard to get Deborah back on the right course, to get her through these difficult years, and I just get a hard time. I get no support from John.
She's all right.
And Mum, it's no help.
So you find that John doesn't support you?
Absolutely.
How long has all this been going on for? From your point of view? From your point of
view?
That means a long time, I think. Sorry?
We didn't
even get around to introduce. Sorry, you are?
I'm Mrs. Brown.
Mrs. Brown.
I'm the mum. I'm her grandma.
And you've been living, where have you been?
I live in the Granny Flat.
And that's been for how long?
For many years.
For many years. Right.
You walked out on me.
Okay, you walked out on you. Right. And we're really getting into this spark. Generally, things well, what it will do is just get the initial information. I mean, we're already right with the way. I mean, you can tell exactly what's going on straight away. And then I'd give introductions to God, who I was, if I hadn't met him before, that we'd be meeting for, I'd say, about 50 minutes to an hour. Some people go on an hour and a half. That sort of long. I do tend to put a time around that for my professional reasons. But also, I think it's not good to extend it too far. It just gets too exhausting, and you lose the point. And it's good to have an enclosed and calculated time limited interview. And I'd say between an hour and an hour and a half. Okay.
Do you interview each participant separately?
Do I interview each participant separately? Yeah, I think interviewing each participant separately is good. And Deb's now 15 and I'd be wanting to see her on her own. I'd also, in fact, I feel like already asking, sorry, what's Grandma's name? Mrs. Brown. Mrs. Brown to leave the room. Now, that would be, in fact, a therapeutic manoeuvre. What you're doing is you're putting a boundary, i.e. the door, between Grandma and the parents. She's been interfering for so long, but I'm not going to start intervention before I've understood the situation. In fact, I haven't got a clue why Mrs. Brown was even allowed to come to the interview, and that's something I'm going to ask pretty soon. Okay. The very fact that she's here is interesting. Okay. Where were we? So you've been living in the flat for how many years was it again, Mrs. Brown?
20 years.
About 20 years. That's a long time. What's that been like, John, with your mother-in-law living?
Oh, occasionally it gets a bit of a drag. You know.
Would the others in the family share that opinion?
Yeah, I think so. It was pretty good years ago when Annette and I wanted to go out. We had a babysitter built in there. She'd be a lot better, really, if she'd just take a bit of interest and live her own life a bit more.
Well, stop it. How do you think Mrs. Brown is feeling at the moment? You've got to look after her as well. Just wait.
you really believe that the husband and wife would be dead once with Mrs. Brown seeing herself?
That's a good point. What do you think of that?
I think that what you've got here is not entirely real in the situation. I think you need to bring it.
I think what else did you, the point being said here is that maybe this is too open and too honest, it's not real. What do you think, what else do you think could be going on?
Well, I honestly don't think that Alan, whatever his age is, would be speaking like that about his grandmother unless he was really hostile and wanted to hurt her such that she'd leave. And so they could sort out their own problems. And you'll find that in my experience that doesn't happen very often. They would sooner deal with it in a more passive manner.
Yep. Sure. I take your point. Okay, so what's it like for you, Mrs. Brown, with all these comments?
Well, I've done my best for all this family, and I've lived there for 20 years, and I've cleaned their house, and I've looked after Deb and all the lives in the house. Well, your mum works all the time, someone has to keep at night.
Okay, so you really feel as though you put a lot of input in, and... What do you think of what Annette said?
Well, I think you've been very grateful for what I've done in the past, especially when I've looked after their lot.
Yes, it's just got a bit too much the last couple of years,
haven't it? Well, I don't know.
Can I just put a full stop there? Often the mother and grandmother are in a real bind there because that's the case. The mother doesn't have any other supports. She does really benefit from the grandmother. There are also other links there. She was pretty close, and we'll look back into their background maybe if we have time. But I suspect that that relationship was pretty close for a long time. It's hard. I suspect it'd be harder for mother to individuate from grandmother than for that mother to leave of her own accord. In other words, a lot of the reason why grandmother is here isn't so much from grandmother's point of view, certainly it's part of that, but I suspect a lot of that is from mother's point of view. And certainly, if they do, the mothers in these situations can find it very hard to individuate and start to get some of their own esteem back in parenting. They've lost their esteem, lost their confidence, and might well be walked over by one of the kids. So you feel as though you put a lot into that house.
I put a lot into that house.
Right.
That's my life.
That's your life. So in view of that, what's it like for you with the rest of the family saying these sort of things?
Well, I feel good. I feel like I've done a lot, and I've cared for them all. Especially Deb, I've looked after her a lot. I love her a lot, huh? I'm feeling really upset.
I mean, the reason that we're here is that we're having the problems with Deborah. And I feel as though I really need to work on this, and yet every time I try, you just somehow get in the way. I want you to stay, I want you to be there, but I don't see how I can work things out with Deborah when you're stepping into the middle all the time.
Well, how would it be different if she weren't stepping into the middle all the time? By asking that question, what I'm doing is trying to find out what degree of motivation the mother's got, even if the grandmother did go.
Well, I really feel that if Deborah wasn't hearing all the time, you know, this I love you and you haven't been brought up all right, that maybe she'd take more notice of me.
What do you think, John?
Yeah, I just think it's too big a thing, you know, there's too much fuss being made. If they leave Debbie alone for a while and let her find her feet, she'd be okay. It's just too much fuss, too much pressure.
Particularly for who?
Well, I feel it's too much pressure. When I get home from work, or, you know, you're just into this tension stuff all the time.
And how do you respond to that, John, when that happens, when there is all that pressure and tension?
I don't like that at all.
So what do you do?
Yeah, watch TV or go and read a book.
Dad goes and withdraws. Yeah. So, and he's done that all his life. Mum feels very unsupported. Okay, just the interview is just about finishing. This is fast forward. help me understand, Deb, help me understand why Mrs. Brown is here today. I'm just wondering, why do you think of it?
Well, I think that we need to get this sorted out as a family. And it's just that I see that Mum has played a big part in making things difficult for Deborah, and we need to get that sorted out.
So whose initiative was it for Mrs. Brown to be here? Because when I rang, I thought it was just going to be you three.
Yeah, well, Mum and I talked about it.
And what happened? Interesting. What happened?
Well, I really felt it was important for me to come because somebody had to look after this and make sure everything was going right with her.
So I wish you weren't.
And then, what do you think of what your mother said? Very ambivalent. Okay, we've got real problems. Okay. Any comments? I mean, this is really fast forward. I guess other things I would have wanted to have done in the interview was have looked more at the process, I guess, what was going on, and get some more information about what really was the problem with Deb. I haven't got a feel for what actually did happen. I'll do that just now. Deb, why are your parents concerned about you? What are the problems?
Hey, why don't you come in? Curfew, on and on.
You feel pretty restricted.
She doesn't understand that she's not safe.
What do you mean?
Look after my mother.
Right. What does your mum mean by not safe?
Sure, she did it.
What do you mean?
Deborah, you don't understand what boys can be like, and that you can get yourself in some trouble. I know that you don't think it would happen, but I'm telling you it would. You see?
Yeah. Does John think in the same way as you do?
I reckon she's just sort of dramatic and radical.
Yeah, I get no support.
Okay. It's quite difficult, I think, case at the moment, to actually define whether it is unsafe. I mean, you know, this day and age, it can be, you know, the 15-year-old girls, when they're going out, it can certainly be of a concern, and you're wondering if you've missed the boat anyway, and how you can actually reduce the harm which is done. Quite clear where the structure is in this family. And maybe just to end, I hardly needed a sculpting exercise, but we'll just try and do one quickly, fast forward, so like that. What I'd like you to do is just to stand up and get yourselves into positions in relation to each other, how close you feel to each other or how distant you feel. Fortunately, people are very intelligent, they understand what I mean. It can take a lot longer to actually put it across. And so I'm going to assume that they understand what I mean and ask them to do it. Would you mind just showing?
What?
I'd encourage dialogue during this time to help them to. There might well be disagreement. Then heading back. They're all moving towards them. So can you then ask them to tell me what this is about, why they do it like that? Just real fast forward here. I'd really appreciate hearing from you why you're standing like this.
Well, for me, I want out. But she?
You want to be out, and she? Where would you like to be?
She follows me. She's dominant.
What's that like for you, Jeff?
It's somewhat space.
Right. You can really get into psychodrama here. Okay. On space. And again, a lot of affective expression here. You can do it static. You can actually get to be in a position, showing mood, showing effect. And I've asked each one what it's like to be where they are. We won't do that. But what I will do is, can you just position yourself so that the way you shape yourself is show me a bit about how you feel within the family. Okay, can you just explain each one? Why? why you put yourself and shape yourself like that?
Nobody listens to me.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what all of us about. She'd be right.
Right.
Well, I'm trying to care for this,
and I really, thank you very much.
Do is to portray and to give a taste of a bit about what it's like, plus the fact that I actually don't think it is beyond, too far beyond people to do this sort of thing. Obviously, if you're meeting them outside the church on a Sunday morning, you wouldn't be getting them to do their psychodrama or whatever there. Question?
At the end of that interview, what you've done in that interview, if you've got those people to open themselves and expose themselves, and rightly so, but I find often at the end of an interview like that, if you don't give them something tangible, then they feel very hurt and let down. How do we overcome that?
What do you mean tangible?
Okay, they've exposed themselves and you've exposed the dynamics and the problem of the dynamics of relationship.
Right.
Okay? And if you let them go away having exposed themselves and seeing again the problems in their intensity without giving them some glimmer of hope. By way, most people want something tangible, what do we do?
Right, okay. Generally, maybe this is my sadistic nature coming out, with a family which has been fairly stuck in the mud for a while, I don't do anything. I actually let them walk out of that room in a state of distress. Now that is assuming I have got a degree of engagement with them, okay, and often that's facilitated with a bit of humour, which might be present, with neutrality between each of them. I try to engage with the grandma, with Deb, with each of them, and assuming there's that, if I feel that that there is that engagement and it's fairly stuck in the mud, then I might not do anything. If, however, as sometimes does occur, as you're mentioning, you feel that they are fairly fragmenting, what I might try and do is, I can't give too much. I mean, I might say, look, this is just this stage. We have to see where it goes. Number of things I try and do is I try and get them just to keep the issues within the room. So when they go out, they live as they were before. Okay, that might not be too helpful, but I try and encourage them to put it on ice. The other thing is to try and contain them by saying, look, we'll pick up next time on this and not. I prefer you not to talk about it between now and next time. And sometimes if it were even worse than that, I'd actually try and get an earlier time when I'd see them and maybe see them individually. And you're nearly you're on the interface between something which is chronic and a crisis situation where you need to really see them quite frequently over that time. If you can't do that, then it really is difficult. That's my